Okay, so this is How to Lie with Statistics, and we have Jordan, True, Hanif, and Arshel.
We read up to chapter 3.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 1, the sample with built-in bias, where they speak about the topic of Yale men, the class of 1994, and how much they make and how much they really make.
Okay, so what I first, I guess, what caught my attention the most was how the author spoke on how people tell statistically truthful information but purposely leave out things that will skew your opinion in order to reach their outcome or to...
The quota.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, so what stood out to you guys?
Me personally, I thought like the I understood like that's what they were saying, like, but I found like for the other example, like they were kind of confusing the way they explained like how they like show the basis of the information, but they leave out other things. Like I was kind of confused on like what's a good example? Like when they were talking about
The $25,000 a year.
Like how much?
Not the Yale example. One of the other examples.
The magazine one.
Yeah, the magazine.
Oh, okay. The Time magazine.
Yeah, like I was kind of confused on like how they were leaving out like different like aspects of information.
So
yeah, because they were like talking about how like you can't really like tell what people read for the magazines and everything, and then they just like went straight to like the like how. Like the statistics of it, but they didn't really explain like how they figured it out and everything. Mm-hmm. So.
Like I feel like if they had like specifically like yeah, they might take out this bit of information and this like maybe say like the trend like maybe like the trend line or line of the residual plot like might go up or like you know I feel like that'd have been a bit more easier to understand rather than like them explaining it with like words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's the one example of the presidential elections in 1948 and 1952, where it says were enough to prove that if there were any doubt. For further evidence, go back to 1936 in the Literary Digest, famed Fiasco. Oh yeah. Okay. The 10 million telephone and digest subscribers. So they called people and. Basically predicted what would happen through the presidential election, and they predicted that Roosevelt would only get 161, while Landon would get 370. And this was false. This didn't happen because we all know Roosevelt did win.
Yeah.
So people who could afford telephones and magazine subscriptions in 1936 were not a cross-section of voters. Economically, they were a special kind of people, a sample bias, because it was loaded. So saying they're trying to figure out who would win and who they're voting for, but they're only calling people who have phones. They're not calling people. Mm-hmm. They can't talk to the people who don't have phones, the people who don't read magazines.
Didn't they also do something with, like, maybe, like, for every 20th vote, they'd be like, for every 20th vote, they would add mm-hmm. that to, like, their information to judge who would win the election.
Right. Every 20th person met on Market Street is interviewed. So you're walking down the street, and they count out 20, and that the 20th person would be interviewed.
It's like how they control. They control who they want for their, like, test. But, yeah, it's like they can skew who they choose to interview
mm-hmm.
to skew their statistics.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, back to the income, $25,000 a year, a Yale man, but they're only contacting the people who are contacting back. So they're not contacting the whole class. It's just who they can get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they were saying that most of the men were making only $5,000 a year, which is a huge difference from $25,000 a year. But the people that they were calling were the ones who were the investment bankers, not the ones who were the drunks or the ones who were just construction workers.
Makes sense, yeah. So is that all you guys had to, like, thought about chapter one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
All right, so chapter two.
Is the well-chosen average.
Mm-hmm. So what did you guys think of that?
Okay, so I have a couple of pages for it. This is about the property.
Yeah, the real estate taxes.
Having sized up, I take pains to tell you that the average income in this neighborhood was $15,000 a year. So a realtor is telling this to someone who is wanting to buy in the neighborhood that $15,000 a year at that time, oh, this is a nice neighborhood to live in, saying that they were a bit of a snob. And then a year later, we met again as a member of some taxpayers' committee. I am circling a petition to keep the tax rate down or assessments down for the bus fare. After all, the average income in the neighborhood is only $3,500. So $3,500 is a huge difference from the $15,000 that they were saying. The $3,500, I imagine that people whose income is $3,500 live in different houses and keep up their houses differently than those who make $15,000 a year. And the question is, am I lying now or was I lying last year? So you're not sure what's the truth and what's the lie.
Right.
Makes sense. It's like they can manipulate the statistics to get the point across that they want to, even if it's not
entirely true.
It's like they should only show you part of the story. Yeah. So it's not like it's lying with statistics.
Right.
Because it's technically true.
Right. So and then there's an example of the average height of a man in some group is only 5 feet. And then you don't have to ask whether the average is the mean, the median, or the mode. So, like, if the average is 5 feet, what's the median? What's in the middle? And what's the most occurring number, which would be the mode? And if you are in the business of manufacturing overalls, you need to know what's the mean, the median, and the mode. And most definitely, you need to know what is the true average.
Because it's like, so the median gives you the exact middle. Like, that gives you what's in like your middle number basically, and the mean doesn't tell you the whole story. The mean, it gives you an average, but there could be a lot of outliers. So it could skew their statistics. Mm-hmm.
The way I see it is like you can't really have a complete data set without like a mean, median, like mode, because you might want to take like. Even if you have the average, like you said, that's not complete. And if you have like you might have an average of like maybe I'm gonna just say 5 feet, but maybe the most frequently occurring number is like maybe 5'5" or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense, Trey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you know they could use like a mean, median, or mode, like to drive whatever they're trying to say. Like they could say, oh, because the height seen most often is 5'4", you have to be like people who typically 5'4", this happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's not telling like the whole story. They're saying, say the most often occurring number is 5'4". Like you said, the height, like the median could be, no, the mean, so the average could be like 5 foot. Then it just can, like, they can use one thing to portray a story when it's something more than that.
Yeah.
It's like a bigger story than what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. It says, if you draw a curve to represent, if you get something shaped like a bell, a mean, median, and mode fall at the same point.
Yeah.
So that's exactly. Okay. So, what's the other one? Okay, so it's talking about the list annual incomes of all families in a given city. You might find that they range from not perhaps $50,000 or so, and you might find a few larger ones. More than 95% of the incomes would be under $10,000, putting them way toward the left-hand side of the curve instead of being symmetrical like a bell. So, talking about like the people at the top, and then you have the outliers at the bottom. So like if people are averaging $50,000, but then there's still people who are making $10,000 and still people who are making even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it says the mean would be quite a distance from the median. You can see what this would do to the if it is true, and the comparison made between the average mean, the 1 year average median, and another. So it's still talking about in the neighborhood where I sold you a property, and the two averages were particularly far apart because the distribution is marked skewed. It happens that most of your neighbors are small farmers or wage earners employed in a nearby village. So we were promised this $15,000 neighborhood, and we got a $1,000 neighborhood of people who work in the farm and people who work it. Yeah. It makes you think, like, when you go and buy a house or you go and buy a new car, like, how much you're being told and how much you're being lied to.
Yeah.
Or it's not even being lied to. It's just how much you aren't being told.
Yeah.
Because they tell you what they want to tell you to drive that so. Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, here's the amount for the car, but then you got to pay so how much for gas, so much for insurance, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, the ticket price, but then, like, that price doesn't come with the radio, and it doesn't come with the air conditioning, and it doesn't come with the steering wheel. You have to add all that in.
Or wheels.
You can't drive off the lot, like, without insurance.
Right.
So that's, like, another $300-$400.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the prices go up by years too with the houses and everything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. The property value. So like they were saying if someone moves in the neighborhood and they make $1 million and they renovate their house, then everybody else will be looked at, but they're renovating their house to a $1 million house, but they're still living amongst other houses that are only worth $200,000. What are you really getting for your money? And is that a neighborhood that you want to move in, even though there's one house?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It says that's why when you read an announcement by a corporation executive or business that the average pay of people who work in his establishment is so much, the figure may mean something, and it may not. If the average is a median, you can learn something significant from it. Half the employees make more than that, half make less. But if it is the mean and you believe it, may be that it's the nature of unspecified, you may be getting nothing more revealing than an average of $45,000 income, and the proprietors and the salaries of the crew, underpaid workers, average only $5,700.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, does anybody else have anything to say about chapter 2?
No.
And we ended it at chapter 3. Right?
Yeah. Chapter 3 was the last one.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of reiterating the same thing over and over again about how much you can lie and how much you can cover up things when you don't want the real information to skew people's decisions.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say it's really lying at this point. It's really just like you said, like covering up information. Mm-hmm.
Or what is that phrase called? Not withholding the truth, but I forget it. Never mind. But yeah, so this was a nice discussion, you guys.
Yeah.
Yay. Yes.
The end.
And we are here with Jordan, Hanif, and True. And once again, we are talking about How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff. A very interesting book.
You didn't introduce yourself.
So. Oh, and I am Arshel.
Oh,
wow. So we have gotten a couple comments back from
Mr. Mark
Miles, and he has given us some questions to ponder and what we should think about. And we looked at the introduction of the book, and we picked out this amazing quote, and it says, there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. So,
what is the difference between a lie and a damned lie?
Right. Honey's question is,
what is the difference between a lie and a damned lie?
So we're going to be looking further into that. Okay. So in the introduction on page 9, we looked at a line that says, a well-wrapped statistics is better than Hitler's big lie. It misleads, yet it cannot be pinned on you.
How?
It's kind of like, so everybody in the world knew, like, that Hitler was the benefactor of the Holocaust, but to his people, they didn't see it as that.
Yes, they did. But they did.
You saying because he was, like, higher, they just saw him as like somebody that was like a god type thing, so they didn't see him as like the.
It's more or less, I guess, because you know, that's what he wasn't presenting to the public. Like he wasn't presenting it as, I guess, you know, restoring Germany's honor or something like that.
day.
But like to the rest of the world, they saw it as a Holocaust.
So his people, they didn't look at it in any way. They looked at it as, oh, we admire him. He's trying to help Germany. This is going to help people. Basically, and Hitler was responsible for it, and they all know Hitler was responsible for it because he was the face of it all. So I feel like...
But that's the view from the rest of the world.
That's the view from the people there, too. It's just that they didn't see it as bad. Mm-hmm. They went along with it, but they also saw Hitler as the leader of it. They used stepped for this man. Mm-hmm. They saw him as the face of it.
But now we need to look into how this really... you know, ties into statistics and how you can, in fact, lie without really lying.
You tell me how.
Well, okay, so I do a poll on people who eat corn, okay? Mm-hmm. So I poll 200 people, and of those 200 people, 150 eat corn and 50 don't eat corn. But then there's a factor of people who are allergic to corn. But I don't then tell you that people are allergic to corn. I just say that they don't eat corn. So I'm lying and not telling you that there are people who cannot eat corn because they're allergic. I'm just saying that they cannot eat corn.
Because they don't want it.
But that's like a lie within a lie. But you don't know that that's a lie. You just know that I'm polling 200 people, and of those 200 people, 50 people don't eat corn. Not why they don't eat corn.
That was real clever, Ashel.
Thank you.
So it's like the deeper meaning behind, like, well, why they do and why they don't.
Yeah. Mr. Miles also said for us to read this quote. Said on page 18, second paragraph, a river cannot, we are told, rise above its source. What? Basically, all right, I'm going to read it again because this don't make sense. A river cannot, we are told, rise. So basically, a river cannot rise above its source. Well, it can seem to if there is a pumping station concealed somewhere about it.
Okay, so like
what?
There's a river. And
they can't rise
there's
above
banks
the
on the river, and the water cannot rise
above
like
the
actual water. It can evaporate, but it cannot rise. You know, scientifically
and
stuff like that.
So there's a pump.
Exactly. So there's like a pump up ahead, and you don't see the pump, and the water is technically rising. But we're not telling you that the water is rising, but you don't know how the water is rising.
So is that like your corn example? How like you're telling us that they don't like. This how many people said they don't eat corn, but you're not telling us, like, who are the people that are allergic to corn.
Right.
So it's like the river shows us, like, we know that a river can't rise, but if it, like, say it start has the, it gives the illusion that it is.
Right.
Because the pump is, like, concealed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they're basically saying? Like, you can tell us something, but not necessarily, like, you can give us a statistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But omit something that would influence our judgment on that statistic.
I wouldn't say that as much as a lie as it is just withholding information.
Yeah.
That could be considered a lie.
Like it's deceitful, but I wouldn't say it's much as much a lie.
So we also looked at we wanted to, you know, do some research and look into how people really lie. With statistics and how they not only lie with just the data, but then they lie with the graphs that they produce from the data. So there is a article that we read, How to Lie with Data Visualization, and it sort of basically talks about how you can manipulate a y-axis to determine what you want people to see, what you want people to perceive from the data that you have. And you can basically, the range of the numbers can be different so that you have a fluctuation of the data and it looks like more than what it actually is. So the example that they gave was interest rates.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they did different scales, and the years are the same from 2008 to 2012, but the scale of the y-axis is different. So
one scale from 3.140 to like 3.154, it made the numbers look smaller. Mm-hmm. But when they made the scale smaller, it made the numbers look larger. Mm-hmm. I guess people look. They don't necessarily analyze graphs all the time. They just look at what looks like a lot or what looks like a little bit.
Right.
So that could be their first judgment, and that'd be it.
It's more or less optical illusion.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What you think, Dora?
I agree with what Hanif said, that people just look at like what's bigger and what's smaller. They don't look at like the actual, like, the numbers and the actual deeper data behind it and everything.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can relate this directly back to the book we're reading. So we read Chapter 6, Chapter 7, and Chapter 8. Chapter 6 is called One Dimensional Picture. 7 is the semi-attached figure. And 8 is Post Hoc Rides Again. So we're just going to give a little summary of, you know, what we read.
Where do you start it off?
We are starting on 6.
Right.
So this focuses on, like, the one-dimensional picture is a kind of type of graph, and it's called the pictorial graph. It is something like a drawing of, like, a small man, and they call it, like, the daddy. To me, that's, like, 1 million people. And to draw, like, a bag of money, to me, that's, like, $1 billion. Normally, these graphs are eye-attracting, and readers never afraid of, like, exploring these graphs. So, yeah.
Furthermore, in the chapter, we talk about, the author talks about how he has pointed the finger on the tricks that are used to manipulate the report and give it a desired direction. So, wherever he wants people to look, wherever he wants people to perceive the data, is where he sort of points them to, by making the graphs appear to the eyes. So, like, one bar graph being brighter, one bar graph being taller, that's automatically what you move towards with, you know, the small money bag and the big money bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So, now, Chapter 7.
All right, in Chapter 7, it was just talking about, like, a semi-attached figure tool, whatever that is. And it was just saying how it can be used to, like, cope with any situation. Like, so the data looks in favor of the person presenting the data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, it's basically saying how people can skew it to make it look how they want it to,
mm-hmm.
to make it look like what they're saying is backed up by like numbers, backed up by like figures,
mm-hmm.
so they can get you to believe what they want you to, like dentists and like toothpaste or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, like in commercials and stuff.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
All right, so now we're gonna do a little summary of Chapter 8. So in Chapter 8, it talks about how smoking can take the grades of students downwards, sort of now bringing in the factor of health issues and how the data can be swayed for, like, public service announcements. So, like, you know, when they come out with the stuff with the flu and they're like, oh, 85% of people are in chance of getting the flu, but if you get the flu shot, then it goes down to 65%, and how sort of that is skewed and they only get it from a certain amount of people that they look at. It talks about in the chapter the study that was conducted, meeting all the standards of statistics, but it was based on, it was false, that B follows A, and then A has caused B. So the treatment of the flu follows the flu, but because you got the flu, you have to get treatment. So then they use the example of tobacco. That no one thinks it's the other way around, of the low grades may lead to tobacco, not tobacco leads to low grades.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they sort of talked about, like, the real-life connection to it. And, yeah, sort of got me thinking, like, what does the FDA tell us? What don't they tell us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are people really getting the measles? Are people really getting the flu?
Or what are they withholding when they give us these statistical, like, information?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, yeah. So, doing a little more further research, we found the cumulative frequency diagrams, which is something that we have, in fact, learned in class before, and how those can be skewed by the number that of the number of the data and what you are really looking at and the frequency of the data. So, yeah. Anybody else? Once again, this is Honey, True, and Jordan, and Arshel, and we are talking about how to lie with statistics.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Hi, you are with, once again, Jordan, True, Hanif, and Arshel, and this is How to Lie with Statistics. And this part of the podcast will be wrapping up the book, as we have now finished, and we're going to be focusing on Chapter 9 and Chapter 10. So, yes, now let's start with Chapter 9 and what was going on and what was talked about. So,
Chapter 9, you can talk to her.
So, in Chapter 9 is how to statistically. So, they were talking about statisticalation rather than, like, manipulation. So, they were talking about, like, they were talking about this map and the use of the map in describing, like, the government for the states, and the manipulation of the statistical calculation, like the calculations from all the states and how they manipulated them and everything. And but they were talking about the case of, like, family income and everything, and the per capita income, and the and how they multiplied the total by the number of family, showing, like, how high the income of a family's of certain families, from small families to large families. And they were comparing the difference between the mean and the median with the statistics.
And they said the mean was used rather than the median because it was like a way of deception. Because if we use, say we add it all up, and because they were multiplying it by the family's, like, income, if they added it all up and then divided it by that number, it would still be high rather than the median, which is just the middle number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the questions that we were asked were to talk about the reported differences and how they may be real and they may not be real, and if they should still be ignored, and how these are sort of two different situations. So we related this back to Chapter 9, and on page 102, it talks about the map. It says, the map shows what proportion of our national income is now being taken and spent by the federal government. It does this by shading the areas of the states west of the Mississippi, expecting only Louisiana, Arkansas, and part of Missouri, to indicate that federal spending has become equal to the total incomes of people in those states. It then speaks on the deception lies in choosing states having large areas, but because of the sparse population, relatively small incomes. So sort of talking about how you are looking at the whole state, but so say Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has different big cities, but then there's other rural parts of Pennsylvania where there are no people living there, so you cannot count the whole state. You have to take each city and each town. You can't just say Pennsylvania as a whole has this income when, in fact, there's different classes in the cities and different classes in the towns.
It kind of goes back to what we were talking about in one of our other podcasts, where, like, not as much lying as much as it is, like, withholding information.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then the second example for the differences would be once what Jordan was talking about, and this was on 104 and 105. what is the average income of American families? It speaks about how earlier in the book it talked about the 1949, the Bureau of Census says that the average income is $3,100. But if you read the newspaper story by the Russell Sage Foundation, we learned that that same year the average income was $5,000, $5,400. $5,000. We'll just say $5,000. I will cut that out. $5,000. Possibly you were pleased to learn that the folks were doing so well, which is much better than the $3,000. And then it now asks the question, now how in the world can Russell Sage and the Bureau of Census be so far apart? So once again, what True was talking about, you're looking at what True, Hanif was talking about. You're looking at the median and not really the mean of all the numbers. And the median, which is, we all know, that's the middle number. And there's, of course, the highest numbers and the lowest numbers. But the mean is what is in the middle, but that does not represent the whole data set.
Well, they're both, like, representations of center. It's just, like, mean is more affected by outliers.
Yes. So then we talked about what a semi-attached figure is. And we found an article, which is by fastcompany.com, seven ways to lie statistics and to get away with it. And we learned that a semi-attached figure is stating one thing as proof for something else. In the article, they sort of talked about an example of CEOs driving a Buick more than any other brand, but what does that really prove? Showing that CEOs are some sort of authority on cars. So then True talks about...
It's kind of like... there's other, like, factors that can, like, go into that. Maybe it's just, like... It's like, let's say Buicks are, like, more expensive. So because you're a CEO, you can afford to drive that car around. It doesn't necessarily mean that because you're a CEO, you favor Buicks. It's just that you can, like, maybe...
Afford.
Yeah, like, you can afford it and other people can't.
So another example that we came up with was toothpaste. So, like... Maybe LeBron buys Colgate, and Colgate's more expensive than that of a generic CVS brand. And because LeBron buys Colgate, that he has more of an authority over the brand, which relates back to the having more the CEOs having more authority over the car brand. So then we... also spoke about from the last podcast was the post hoc reasoning, which that was chapter 8, and the example was the cigarettes and how smoking cigarettes could affect your grades in school. But we talked about how there's different factors that go into that. It may not be just because you smoke cigarettes. Maybe
it's like the it might not be as much cigarettes. Maybe like the crowd you're like exposed to when you're like doing that.
The crowd you're exposed to, the type of school you go to, the like the criteria that the school expects you to go by, and the workload.
Or like living conditions, etc. It's like a lot of things that can affect. It's like that's like a very broad statement you can make. Whereas like there's a lot of other factors that can play into that.
And maybe it's not like. The cigarettes are the reason for the low grades. Maybe it's the other way around. Like,
it might just be... It could be
the low
like
grades
just,
are the reason for cigarettes.
Yeah, or it could just be a simple coincidence.
Or that too, yeah.
Exactly. So in Chapter 10, this is now wrapping up the book, there were questions that were posed for what you're thinking should be when you're looking at statistical data and the first question that you should ask yourself.
So the first question to ask with statistics is, who says so? So, like, who's behind the information? Is it a good reputation? And who affects the reliability of the information? So, yes. Anyone want to comment?
Yeah, I guess. Who is, whoever the statistician is, making, not necessarily making up data, but giving us the data, they could have a certain bias. So however they feel about the data is how we see the data, which could affect our opinion.
Especially after like what we read, like how statisticians like manipulate different data. So like you said, if the statistician is like biased, he could be like, all right, I'm just gonna take everything that supports my theory.
And the next question was, how does he know? So, like, how did he get his information? And, yeah, like, how did he know?
So, who did he pull? Did he pull a wide range of people? Did he only focus on small people? Which I think is very interesting because my mom always talks about when you hear about these polls of they polled 50% of Americans and they said this, but she was like, but I didn't get the call. So you can tell that it's a controlled group. They always, like, is that reliable because you're not polling a wide range of people? So I'm talking about looking into to what the data really says and who the data is really looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next question was, did people respond honestly? So, like, were they, like, satisfactory? Was it, like, I mean, were the questions become satisfactory?
Well, that's just what, like, anybody in general, because people aren't always truthful, mm-hmm. like, which could affect how these polls turn out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. sometimes, like, I know some people, like, maybe don't want to answer truthfully. Like, they might have a different perception of themselves than what actually is. So, mm-hmm. it might, mm-hmm. that's, if you were, like, doing a survey or something, you might be like, oh, are you, it might be, even an example, like, are you stingy? You might not think so, but other mm-hmm. people might think so.
Or, like, maybe you could, like, be not, you could be unsure about stuff, like,
yeah.
how many times a day do you, I don't know, go to the bathroom? You might not be exactly sure how many
right.
times,
mm-hmm.
like, so, stuff like that.
It could be, like, how the question is posed, so, like,
oh,
how
true.
It was worded, and what, how each person, read how each person reads it. So, like, I may not read the same question that you're reading because of the way that I think.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Next question was, what's missing? So, the most used techniques is to hide information. So, like, what's
that's
missing?
That's pretty much what we've been talking about
yeah.
in the book.
Yeah.
Like, just withholding information.
Withholding information and sort of not lying, but
not lying,
fully.
Not being secret.
Right. Exactly.
Did somebody change the subject at all? Like, that was one of the questions. Did somebody change the subject? Okay,
I guess the way, like, I guess how that would work, it's kind of like we were talking about before, like, the way you might be asked the question. So
mm-hmm.
I'm like, it might be like, maybe you're asked a question like, would you say you maybe do things more for yourself than others? And the other one, like, are you stingy? Like, you might take it two different ways.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Like, you might not think you're stingy, but you might, like...
think you do more for others.
Yeah.
Huh, that's good.
And the last question was, does it make sense? So, is it irrational or out of context or anything? So...
yeah.
Do you believe
like
the data?
Outliers too.
Yeah. Do you believe the data? Do you think that it's true? Is this like, realistic? Is this something that you can see people answering? So, yeah. We have now come to the end of How to Lie with Statistics. Any, like, overall thoughts of the book?
I feel like the book was a lot of stuff that we already knew,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it was just told to us in a way that we never learned before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we never, like, sat down and thought
about
it.
About it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, put it into context of real-life situations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right, so this was True Hanif, Jordan, and Arshelle. This was How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff. And we may part our ways and say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.